Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Two Abdullahs Plus One. So, three Abdullahs. We have Abdullah Gondal, and Apostate Aladdin. And today we're going to be talking about Hatun Tash's incident that happened at Speaker's Corner. We're going to go into that, what happened, and Muhammad Hijab's response to that. Before I get into that Muhammad Hijab's video, Abdullah Gondal, over to you to explain a little bit more about Hatun, who she is, a little bit of history as to what happened before this incident, and then maybe why are we talking about this is another question, right?
So let's start off with where this happened. It's Hyde Park, London, I believe. It's Speaker's Corner, so I think once a week people kind of gather there and they have this back and forth debate or something, and it's for the public, so people can bring their own cameras, anybody can show up and talk about basically anything. And because of the way the nature of the area is, things do get heated because you get people from all sorts and all different types of walks of life and different faiths. You have atheists, Jews, Christians, Muslims debating on a wide variety of topics, from homosexuality to child marriage to God's existence, right? So Hatun Tash has been a very frequent member or a person that visits the park a lot, and she's extremely brave. And I just want to go back all the way to, I think, 2016 was it, when I first started seeing her. And back then I was still Muslim, and those were the videos about the holes in the Quran narratives when she, I think, along with a couple other Jay Smith, they brought the copies of the different Qurans, the 20 some mushafs, and they were pointing out the differences, and it shocked the Muslims. And a couple of years later, the whole Quran standard narrative has holes in it happened, and it took another plunge. Now, recently, we also know the Charlie Hebdo thing happened, where the cartoonists were attacked and killed, and then their case was being heard, and there was another attack by a Pakistani man. And a few months prior to this incident where she was stabbed, she had actually been slapped on video by a Muslim man in Hyde Park, who then claimed that he was Christian, whatnot. And then a few months from that, now finally we see this this horrible incident happen where this guy just lunges at her and tries to, first I believe he was going for her neck, and she is very lucky that he missed. And then I'm happy that she's, from what I've been told, alive and safe and well. It was just a slash injury. But the thing is that what has been done, the damage that's done, why does this keep happening? Why do people lose their minds over little cartoons of a man who died 14 centuries ago? And that's what we're going to try to answer today, because the political situation around these conversations always tries to shield the religion of the minority. But maybe, perhaps, we're going to try to explore the idea that maybe Islam is the problem. Islam, in fact, maybe promotes such ideas, such vigilante style attacks. And we will go through some scholastic works and consult them. Anyways, over to you, Samir.
Yeah. So, Aladdin, you want to add anything to that before I jump in?
Nothing at the moment. No.
Okay, cool. So before I actually jump into about this, well, first thing is, yeah, we're gonna say that no matter what she did, no matter how offensive she was, no matter how vulgar she was, even no matter what she said or anyone says, nobody deserves to be punched, slapped, hit, you know, slashed, stabbed, shot for simply saying some words, right? Like at the end of the day, the way I see it is, when you do that, you are escalating the violence to the next level. If someone, let's say, swears at you, insults your mother, that's a form of violence. But when someone actually physically, that's like that, you have now escalated it and you've taken it to the next level. So you are actually guilty of actually making the situation worse, right? So that's just to make that, you know, straightforward and upfront. What I wanted to say, another thing I want to say is, I just want to respond to this comment that only ex-Muslims should be allowed in Western countries. So by no means do any of the three of us, I would say, agree with this. This is honestly ridiculous. This is a ridiculous comment. And sorry to call you out like this, but this comment needs to be called out. there's many good Muslims out there. There's many Muslims that disagree with what happened, that are against this slashing. Speaker's Corner is almost like a sacred space, and it's a tradition that anyone can come to this place and say anything, and no one should be attacked for that. Of course, the ideas can be attacked. I mean, that's the whole point of Speaker's Corner. Like, people are all shouting at each other. And this is a tradition that they hold sacred, that this is a place that anyone can go and speak their mind. You get your little soapbox and you get to talk about whatever you want to talk about, right? This is how Speaker's Corner works. But at the same time, we're not throwing all Muslims under the bus either. We want to make that very clear. Our perspective here is not one of, judging people by group membership. We're going to talk about the ideology and what the ideology brings in and how that connects to a typical Muslim. And I'm going to be the one that's going to keep reminding people that this is not what we're about. We're not about, condemning someone just because they fall into a group, because there's many Muslims that they fall in the same group, but they have completely different views. Right. Do you guys want to add anything to that before I jump into the Muhammad Hijab video?
One thing I would like to add is there's something that believing in an ideology and then versus practicing or putting it into practice, right? And a lot of Muslims will claim that they believe in Muhammad and Islam and Allah, but when it comes to putting into practice, they will think 10 times before they actually do anything. Like, in fact, most of them won't. Most of people that I know, that Muslims in my life, are not violent. And the comment that he says that only ex-Muslims should be allowed in Western countries is kind of stupid, because I mean, I was a Muslim when I came to Canada, so I wouldn't have gotten to where I am had I not been allowed that exposure in Canada, right? So the idea that limiting this is, it's kind of bigoted, it's kind of racist, it's a very hard line to maneuver.
It's unfair.
Yeah, it's unfair. Like, yeah. People's values change. You got to give people a chance.
Yeah. You judge everyone should be judged by the individual positions, not by assuming what they believe based on the group membership, right? That's basically my point. Thanks, Greg, for the super chat. Glad to see this collab between you three again. Yeah, it's a lovely... there's a funny comment here. Aladdin needs a dog's. Cats are too halal. A little bit of lighthearted comment there before we get into the serious stuff. Okay, I'm going to share...
My cats are haram, by the way. I've got two males and they lick each other way too often. That is not halal. So I'm okay. I'm haram.
I'm going to share this. Okay, so I'm going to go into the video now.
You come today, man. I think you'll be this week. Oh, whoa.
What a condemnable action that we just witnessed there with this stupid man, okay, who's acting as a lone wolf, going and lunging at a defenseless woman in broad daylight, probably going to get life prison sentence. Why are you doing that? On what basis do you think that's a good idea? An absolutely sickening display of cowardice by someone who doesn't need to do what he's doing. If you want to serve Islam, you don't do it by acting in a violent and criminal manner. When we have the ability, and we have been doing successfully, I might add, in the very place that you tried to do this attack, to air our opinions to the people. What an abominable and condemnable and diabolical and megalomaniacal action that you just committed. We cannot stress strongly enough how ridiculous this is. You think this is in the favor of the Muslim, maslaha of the Muslim community? This is ridiculous. And I think that, to be honest with you, there's a lot of people to blame here. There's a lot of people to blame. We are, as the Muslim community, to blame. That we still have takfiri by the looks of it, because someone who does something like that is a takfiri, for the most part. That the same kind of people that are willing to kill you and me, Muslim people, because they're taking the law into their own hands. They don't respect the community ethic. They don't respect the Muslim community at all. They're just taking the law into their own hands. People like that, it's our fault that we have not combated their poisonous ideology in a strong enough manner. And moreover, I want to say something. This is actually a lesson to all of us. Because look, we have been deluded with a false sense of security. We think that we're secure. Because broad daylight and there's police officers. Let me tell you something about this country. I've lived here for 29 years, all my life. And I've seen and witnessed so many things. And we've seen and we've witnessed how many stabbings happen in the
Okay, I'm gonna just pause it right there before you let him get any further. So I watched the entire 8-minute video of him ranting against the police, ranting against the UK, the lack of security they're providing. So I'm just gonna summarize the video and then I'm gonna let these guys jump in. So basically what he does is he's doing damage control. He's saying lone wolf attack, you know, not obviously approved by the Muslim community, which I agree with him. He's saying we are responsible to some. He's kind of, in the beginning, he does say that we are also guilty of not dealing with this, which is a very positive comment. And I really appreciate that he says that. And this is, you know, it's very rare to hear a Muslim admit that this Muslim community has a problem with extremism and terrorism and violence. But he's, you know, he did say that publicly, which he deserves credit for that, in my opinion. And again, I'll let the other guys agree or disagree. And then he goes on and tries to make this about a police system issue. Oh, the police allows stabbings. There's too many gangs in the UK and stabbings. And, you know, I don't feel safe. And, you know, we're not safe in Speaker's Corner. And, you know, the police need to do better and protect all the communities. And he goes on and on about the police. So if you watch the clip, right at the beginning of the clip, there's a police car right there. And like within seconds of her being stabbed, the police, you know, it comes on, starts chasing the guy. I don't know if they caught him or not. But anyways, the point is that the police were there and the police were doing something. And of course, you know, in my opinion, things like this, the police can't stop exactly because it happens all of a sudden. Some guy comes and he has a knife and boom, you know, it just happens so quickly. Like, how would they prevent that, right? You know what I'm saying? Unless they're like standing behind her or like guiding her. I mean, I'm sure they can change the Speaker's Corner the way it works or whatever, but in the current way it is, crowds and stuff, you know, things like this can happen. Okay, they did not catch him, someone saying in the comments. That's very unfortunate they didn't catch him. And then Hijab goes on and says, kind of weirdly, we need to protect ourselves, us Muslims. You know, here you should get a pepper spray and, you know, martial arts and whatever. And this can happen to us too. And if he means as like a revenge attack, like, you know, like people attacking Muslims in as a retaliation to what happened, yes, that's very possible. And that does happen. And, you know, someone like Tommy Robinson, you know, could potentially be involved in, like, you know, stirring up sentiments against the Muslims in situations like this. You know, people like that, I'm saying, not necessarily him, but these things do happen, right? These things do happen, that there are revenge attacks against Muslims. But in general, I don't know the history of Speaker's Corner if Muslims ever got attacked like this. Do you guys know, did this ever happen to Muslims?
I don't recall any. I mean, I remember there was Shia Sunni fights. I remember that. I remember Hatun getting slapped. There were a few intimidation things where Hijab got into a face-to-face with a Christian preacher and there was pushing a little bit. And like Muhammad Hijab, and they like, it was a good, almost a fist fight there. But I can't pinpoint anything more than that. I mean, I'm not always sitting on the Dawa channels and scouring all the Hyde Park videos and stuff, right?
So he's probably not talking about that. He's just saying in general. So again, in my opinion, what he's trying to do is he's trying to make this about something that it's not. He's trying to make this about police protection. And he said, I'm going to boycott Speaker's Corner for 30 days until the police can guarantee protection. And that was basically, and it goes on and on and on for 8 more minutes about how bad police, I mean, that's basically it. So that's the summary of what he said. So if you guys want to go ahead and jump in there and comment on that.
Well, I like that you're advocating for him. You said maybe he's thinking because of revenge attacks, you know, the Muslim community has to be prepared. I wish he had said that explicitly, and I would believe it if he had said that explicitly, but it sounded more like he's trying to still play the victim. Like, this could have been one of us, is what he was saying. We need to protect ourselves better, which is ironic because the perpetrator, you know, we all know which side he's on. Not that I like playing sides, but when it comes to, is he going to attack, you know, a Muslim or a critic of Islam? Like, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah. Can we talk about that Takfiri thing he said?
I mean,
yeah.
He was being bigoted too.
He was like, he looks like a Takfiri. Like, what does that mean?
Like, what is wearing? The funny thing is, if you open the screen I'm showing, there's a hadith in Bukhari, and Muhammad Hijab is always going on about, like, Islam is like this pure thing. The guy who did it was just
can you zoom in?
Yeah, for sure. All right.
Was it the slave owner?
No, this is actually the chapter of killing the Khawarij and Al-Mulhidun, atheists, from Sahih al-Bukhari.
What?
There's a chapter titled, Now, in this hadith, Muhammad says that, no doubt I heard Allah's Apostle saying, during the last days, there will appear some young foolish people who will say the best of words, but their faith will not go beyond their throats. And they will go out of their religion as an arrow goes out of game. So wherever you find them, kill them. For whoever who kills them shall be rewarded on the day of resurrection. Now tell me if this is exactly not what is being enticed.
But so someone's asking, what is a takfiri? Can you explain before we jump in?
Takfiris are guys, or it could be any sect really, who's just always saying, oh, that guy's a kafir, that guy's a kafir. Mostly it's the Sunni Salafi types.
What he means is extreme Salafis. So basically, extreme Salafis meaning people that they consider everybody else kafir except themselves, and they don't. He's saying they don't go by the Muslim community. So basically, they're saying like the people that become jihadis, they're like these takfiri people that are willing to kill other Muslims. So he's trying to say this guy, you know, could have been one of those type of people. But this hadith, okay, other than the weird, inclusion of Mulhidun, atheist, what I was going to say was, like, Khawarij is actually describing a group of people that are extremely pious Muslims. You see the marks of sujood on the foreheads, they read Quran day and night, but it does not go by past the throats. So this hadith, which I think is obviously fabricated, is saying to the Muslims, you can kill these people. You can kill these Khawarij. And now, of course, people always debate what the Khawarij. You know, people will say ISIS or Khawarij. People will say a lot of Sufis say that some Salafis are Khawarij because they kind of match this idea of taking things so literally. They read the Quran, but they don't implement it. And so this is describing, in my opinion, this is different. This is not, how is this related? I don't see the connection between this and what Hatun is saying. Oh, what happened to Hatun?
So what I'm trying to point out here is the phrase, so wherever you find them, kill them, is the vigilantism that is being promoted. So i.e. taking the law into your own hand, and how these kind of wordings are very dangerous, especially when they're attributed to Muhammad the Prophet. Now, if you give this hadith to Muhammad Hijab, he's bound by the framework of Sunni Islam, where Muhammad did encourage this vigilantism. So him saying that only takfiris do this is bizarre, because his prophet encouraged the exact same thing. And as we move forward, we'll see more and more of that, where his own cowardice will show, where he has no balls to be able to open the books of these scholars and then tell the whole world that the way this Muslim attacking that lady is bad, as he's a takfiri, is Ibn Taymiyyah then not the takfiri by the same standard? Because he wrote a whole book on the thing that you should kill anybody who insults Muhammad. Reliance of the Traveler, Qadi Ayad, all of these big scholars, they say the exact same thing. So why is Muhammad Hijab not man enough to call those scholars out? And as we go through, we'll see the explicit calls to violence by these scholars. And that's what's the problem that needs to be addressed.
Okay, but do you agree or disagree that within the framework of Islam, Sunni Islam, you have to obey the law of the land, and so vigilante violence would not be allowed? Because you're right that, again, there's contradiction in the primary texts, meaning that there's hadith that say, like, for example, wherever you find them, kill them, for example, this one. But there's also, there's a lot of examples of vigilantism in Islam. But when I was a Muslim, I was taught that vigilantism is not allowed. There has to be a qadi. There has to be witnesses. For example, if there's even for adultery, for example, like when you kill someone for adultery, there has to be four witnesses of penetration. So the same idea for like blasphemy, there's a court case and whatever. It wouldn't just be like, you know, some guy would go and kill them. Now, of course, this Khawarij hadith I see a little bit differently, because it seems like out of place, and it's talk, you know what I mean, like it's weird. It's just like kill Muslims that you think are not Muslim or something, like,
yeah. So bizarre. this is a question, a very interesting question, right? Like, do you obey the emir or do you take the law into your own hands? And if the emir is a kafir in your view, then you're not bound to obey the emir, right? So in Reliance of the Traveler, actually, it's one of the first slides in the presentation we're going to go through, is there's point 08.4 where it says that there's no indemnity for killing an apostate or any expiations since it is killing someone who deserves to die. So there's a lot of allusions. Yeah, it's the first slide. Yeah. And right in the middle here, you'll see 08.4. He's talking about apostates, but there's no indemnity. There's no expiation. If somebody does kill them, yeah, they killed somebody who was supposed to be killed anyways. So there are issues, but sometimes these people don't actually get punished and they just get forgiven by the Muslim Amir for doing his job, right?
So again, is this, this is an Islamic state though.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the rules would be different if you're mm-hmm. in a non-Muslim country. That's the point I'm trying to make, is that in a non-Muslim country, you are, now I remember Hamza Yusuf teaching very clearly that anyone that agrees to migrate to a Muslim country, you're taking an oath of citizenship. You're taking an oath where you promise and you agree to follow the laws of the land. So unless, of course, the law forces you to do something haram, then you refuse to do it. Mm-hmm. But other than that, would you not just obey the, wouldn't you be under that framework forced to obey? And so therefore stabbing a Muslim, a non-Muslim, would not be allowed under Islamic law. Like he's saying, the Muslim community condemns this.
Yeah, yeah, of course, of course.
Guys, so I don't buy that.
Another way around it is if the Muslim is non-citizen of that country and he's a visitor, he's an actual Muslim citizen who's here for that purpose, like we see a lot of the times, and that exception wouldn't allow him because he's not supposed to abide by those laws per se. If he's coming with a mindset where, you know, he's going to do this, there are loopholes around this. But anyways,
Aladdin, sorry, you were going to say, Aladdin, you wanted to say something? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So just I'm watching this from the outside, just thinking as someone who doesn't know anything about Islam or what's going on right here, when they hear that this thing, this kind of vigilante justice could be forgiven or is okay only if Sharia law is, you know, the law of the land, that's not really making me feel any more at ease with Islam or Muslims, be it in a secular country or in their own country. You know what I mean? Like, if we say that this should not have happened in the West mm-hmm. because according to Islam, you're supposed to listen to the ruler.
Yes.
That's still the same issue, though, mm-hmm. that we're saying they're doing the bad thing, but only at home. So let's just, you know, exactly. I'm not going to carry
on. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I'm just making it clear because I mm-hmm. don't want people to think that Islam teaches Muslims to go and stab non-Muslims because they're kafirs. Like, that's what I'm trying to make clear. Yes, under right. Islamic law, and that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to make that very clear in the next couple of slides, that under Islamic law in an Islamic state, these are the punishments for blasphemers. And of course, even, you know, enemies of Allah and whatnot. But what I'm trying to differentiate is what this guy did would not have been allowed according to most Muslims. And I'm pretty sure that most imams are going to come out and condemn him.
Read the one point above it, the 08.3. And he says explicitly that if he is a free man, no one besides the caliph or his representative may kill him. Oh. If someone else kills him, the killer is disciplined for arrogating the caliph's prerogative and encroaching upon his rights, as this is one of his duties.
It's one of his duties to kill blasphemers.
You can't call shotgun on killing blasphemers.
Right?
Yeah.
So now it's a question of, like, the guy that killed the blasphemer, is he going to be charged for murder? No. He's going to be given a tazid, a disciplinary punishment, because he already killed somebody who deserved to be killed. You understand if you read the next point right after that? Because he killed somebody who deserved to die. So that's the whole point. The vigilantism is kind of there in a way where you can maneuver around it.
Oh, man, that's pretty bad. If there's no indemnity for killing an apostate or any expiation since it is killing someone who deserves to die. So let's just to be clear, what book is this, The Reliance of the Traveler? Can we just be clear? Can we clarify what that is?
So The Reliance of the Traveler is, I think, a 14th century, I believe, a Shafi manual of fiqh. It's a very, very thick volume. It goes through very detailed, minuscule matters of fiqh, ranging from prayer to governance and personal life.
This is a sort of authoritative text off the Shafi school of thought that was written in the 14th century, so 7 centuries after Muhammad's time, but it codifies some of the laws. But just to clarify to everyone, Sharia law or fiqh is something that every scholar is allowed to make an opinion on. So, for example, this specific book, which is, you know, renowned, let's say, and well-known, it doesn't necessarily mean that everything in this book would be agreed upon by all the scholars. When I was a Muslim, I was a Salafi Muslim for most of my Islamic life, and I would not have gone by what this book said. And I used to go by modern Salafi scholars, what they would say, for example, Sheikh Munajjad on Islam QA and others like that. And they wouldn't disagree with any of this. They wouldn't disagree with this particular rulings. But just to make that clear, that the fiqh is something that is, again, an effort by Muslim scholars to come up with the correct rulings. But the reason why we're sharing this is to show you that even in major schools of thought, this is very, like, this is the standard opinion. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Okay. And you'll see that we'll go through not just this book, we'll go through a Maliki scholar Qadi Iyad's book, and then we'll go through a Salafi sweetheart Ibn Taymiyyah's book. So when you see the whole picture, then they will quote other scholars from before them and claim unanimity on over these rulings, where you're killing not only a blasphemer, he's obligated to be killed. You cannot forgive him. And even if it's a non-Muslim, you have to kill them. So these are very interesting details we're going to get into as we go on.
And do you differentiate here between, you know, like, for example, 8.1 is talking about apostasy. 8.0 is talking about apostasy.
Mm-hmm.
So, isn't this all about apostasy, not someone like Hatun who is Christian? She's not an apostate.
So when we go back in a circle and later on, you'll see that blasphemy makes you an apostate. So there's a next section where it talks about blasphemy, and it'll tell you that, oh, if you say this, for example, in number 6, you see, to be sarcastic about Allah's name, his command, his interdiction will make you an apostate. Right. Or to revile Allah or his messenger, and point number 4 on the extreme right, it clearly says that's what constitutes apostasy.
Should we continue next slide?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
I apostatize every day, alhamdulillah.
Oh my God, it says that even if you mockingly say on point number 8, I don't know what faith is, you could be liable to be killed. To reply to someone, there is no power or strength save through Allah.
Oh, so wow. People are saying Hatun is an ex-Muslim. I did not know that.
I didn't know that either. I thought was Christian, yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's Christian, ex-Muslim.
Oh, okay. That's so cool. I thought she was born Christian.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that either. That's cool. I didn't know that, yeah.
Okay, and she's Turkish, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool. Okay, so there you go. This applies on her now.
should I continue or not yet?
I mean, like, as you can read, like, even to deny the existence of angels, jinn, or heavens, to be sarcastic about any ruling of the sacred law. I mean, you can basically be termed an apostate for the most minuscule of things. It's so bizarre.
I remember someone telling me, don't even make fun of beard.
It's, yeah.
The sunnah.
Is that Aladdin it says in the point 15?
Oh my Aladdin. God, yes. Aladdin Abedin. Right?
Yeah.
Oh Allah Adin as a falling to revile the religion of Islam. Wait, look at number 17. To believe that things in themselves by their own nature have any causal influence independent of the will of Allah.
What the hell?
This is so philosophical. I have the wrong philosophical opinion. You deserve to be
killed. They're like, holy shit. And the point what I'm trying to get to is these are gigantic scholars writing this in full-on manuals. And I'm just, again, I'm asking Muhammad Ajab, where are you to condemn these scholars who are espousing such ideas? If you're mad at that guy being a takfiri, well, are you going to takfir the scholar too? Are you going to be a coward, you know? Another one thing here is, like, this is very the poets, right? So somebody like Hatun says something with her words, and then guy comes, stabs her. And this didn't happen just once or twice. It happened a few times in Muhammad's life. In fact, He had a whole Dead Poet Society, I would call it. There's like about four or five, six of them, but I'm just going to go through a couple. The Prophet said, who was ready to kill Ka'b bin Ashraf, who has really hurt Allah and his apostle. Now, what did he do? He just said some words, right? And Muhammad says, do you like me to kill him? And he replied, so they've sent a guy. And basically the whole story was like an Assassin's Creed kind of movie where they went and deceived him to come out. And another one. Then there's on the right side, you see Abu Rafi's story where he did the exact same thing. He just wrote some poetry and he hurt Allah's messenger's feelings. And then Muhammad sends another assassin squad and he gets him killed. Is this not vigilantism? Because Muhammad is not the emperor of Arabia right now. This is just...
This is not vigilantism because this is ordered by the emir, which was Muhammad. You're talking about the Ka'b ibn Ashraf or the other one?
Ka'b ibn Ashraf Abu Rafi, yeah.
Ka'b ibn Ashraf was a political assassination, straight up 100%, was not vigilantism. Mm-hmm. Vigilantism, I mean, this was almost like what, you know, for example, when China comes and kidnaps one of its people that's in America that's speaking against it, or for example, Iran goes and point, you know, like these sort of political, it's a political assassination, you can say. But of course, in this case, it was done because he was insulting Muhammad. So Muhammad was so offended by this guy's words that he had him basically assassinated. I wouldn't call that vigilantism.
It definitely inspires that behavior, especially the thing is that you will see these incidents 10 slides later being used by the scholars to justify vigilantism and killing blasphemers.
So, okay, let's continue with that.
Okay, and now we are at the singing slave girl and the murdered concubine. Again, this one is actually vigilantism, where I'll start with the one on the right side, and I'll have Aladdin explain this one too. I believe there's two hadith, one's in Ibn Majah or Nasai, and one's in Abu Dawud, and they're both classed as authentic. And this is about this blind man who had a slave mother. So she was the Umm Walad. And Aladdin, I'll let you explain it now.
Yeah, so the story goes that this blind man had a slave, a concubine, and he had two children with her. Apparently, she used to disparage and abuse the Prophet. But I don't think the Prophet had any idea, or at least the way that the hadith was told. But I kept reading that the English translation kept saying, abuse the Prophet. And you can already tell there's like a victim blamey tone to begin with. Because it, the only thing that I can understand is she used to talk bad about the Prophet, right? Anyway, so one night she was slandering the Prophet and the guy took a dagger. The blind guy took a dagger and stabbed her. And one interesting detail is that there was a kid between her legs and there was blood on the kid. Just to like highlight the brutality of that scene. So the next day, the Prophet asked, who did this? And this guy came up and he said, I love this woman, or at least she was my companion. We had two kids together, but she used to disparage you, so I killed her. And the Prophet said, oh, be witness, no retaliation is payable for her blood. So that's how it went down. And I looked into, you know, explanations for this. As a Muslim, this is one of the things that really made me question how Islamic are these vigilante attacks, or how un-Islamic are they, you know?
Because what ends up happening is Muhammad basically straight up condoned vigilantism. He said, yeah, the guy, just leave him. What he did, he's not supposed to be punished. Like, there's no retaliation or anything. Mm-hmm. And yeah, well, the guy was expecting
say this stuff.
Yeah, and the guy was expecting punishment because you see he was kind of hesitant to claim responsibility at first, but then he did, and then got blessings from Muhammad, right? And you'll see that he blessed a couple other people he sent with the assassin squads, right? Mm-hmm. Now on the left hand side, we're talking about these singing girls. So back when Muhammad was in Mecca, so this is where he was a subject of the Meccan leaders. He was not in any position of power. There were these girls, singing girls, Fartana and her friend, who used to sing satirical songs about the apostle. So when he captured Mecca, he ordered them to be killed. Okay, and then this is Muhammad. Now, what is interesting, he's kind of back projecting his feelings being hurt. And he's killing people from before who had insulted him in Mecca. And he goes on two singing girls. One was kill, other ran away, asked for immunity, and they gave her similarly Sarah. Anyways, they go on and they kill these two girls. Now, another thing I wanted to show you guys, I'm sharing my screen. This is something that happened after the poet's being killed. And what this is, let me just zoom in. It's Tabari Volume 7. I don't know if you guys can see that well, but I'll read it for you. This is right after, I believe, killing of one of the big leaders. Now, it says, the next morning, the Jews were in a state of fear on account of our attack upon the enemy of God, and there was not a Jew but that feared for his life. The messenger of God said, whoever of the Jews falls into your hands, kill him. So Mahesha bin Mas'ud fell upon Ibn Sunayna, one of the Jewish merchants who was in close terms with them, and they killed him just for no reason, just straight up just murdered him. This is also reported in Sira ibn Ishaq, the earliest. It says, the apostle said, kill any Jew that falls into your power. Thereupon, Mahesha bin Mas'ud leapt upon Ibn Sunayna, a Jewish merchant who they were friends with. Yeah, he killed him. And it's really unfortunate.
Wow, this is crazy. I don't think I've ever read stuff like this
before. Yeah, it's this wild. Disclaimer, like, this is, I'm just quoting Muhammad. I'm not promoting any of this. This is just crazy. And it happens again, I believe, in another book. And Sira ibn Kasir, Volume 3 as well, is reported through Ibn Hasak again, that kill whatever Jew you make, kill, conquer, yeah. And then they kill this man. And it's unfortunate. Now, the problem is, why are these so many major mainstream books reporting this kind of stuff? Like, this is straight up vigilantism, right? But anyways, the point is
crazy. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, like, it's pretty nuts. What he's pretty explicit in his proclamations there.
Do you know what the context is of those things? Like, what was going on? I've never heard this before. This is wild. It's just decided to kill a bunch of Jews for what reason? Like, was this after Hudaybiyah? Like, not Hudaybiyah. Was this after, like, they were fighting the certain Banu Nadir or Banu Qurayza or something? Like, this is wild. Like, because they had like peace treaties, right? The Jews had their own community.
This is right after the killing of Ka'b bin Ashraf.
Okay.
Yeah. So this ties into the vigil where Muhammad kills their leader as gets him assassinated and then says this.
Jeez, it's crazy. Yeah, this is wild. So the point of highlighting all these things is just to kind of point out that the religion itself has a lot of terrible teachings in it, a lot of violent examples. I do think that the vast majority of Muslims, they don't see things as if they should take things in their own hands. And I do worry that the person that did this does have some sort of mental issues, because despite the fact that Islam has so much like violent, nasty things in it, we do find that the vast majority of Muslims, they don't behave like this. They don't go out stabbing people. And, you know, like, if I'm guessing, if we go back to Speaker's Corner, this is probably the worst thing that's ever happened there. I don't know if someone can confirm with me. You know, Hatun was punched before, slapped, and now, you know, slashed and potentially even, you know, attempted murder, maybe, right? This doesn't even, despite the fact that every single day at Speaker's Corner, there are people insulting Islam, insulting Muhammad, attacking Islam, according to many Muslims, insulting. Maybe it's not meant to be insulting. Maybe it's meant to be, you know, productive, but they might see it as insulting. So I'm saying insulting. So despite that, we don't have, you know, at least at Speaker's Corner, we don't have this happening every day. But the thing is, some people do take it this way, which is why it's not just, you know, this one random incident, but you do find that all over the world, especially in certain countries like Pakistan, this is considered a very, like, honorable thing to do. You know, I made a video about the guy that this Pakistani man that traveled to the UK, to France to basically burn the Charlie Hebdo newspaper office. And when he wasn't a really bright guy, he got there, they moved, they relocated. He couldn't figure out how to find a new location. So he's like, oh, I'll just stab someone instead. So he just stabbed some people. Like, he was a complete moron, right? But that's what he did. This was, and you know, when they interviewed the dad, now again, there's probably some pressure on the dad too, to be honest, but like, he was like praising his son and saying, you know, his son's a good guy, and you know, the and forget the dad, everybody else was proud of this guy too. There's a, the Abdullah Gondo, who's the name of that that guy that was assassinated, the MP in Pakistan, that was
Salman Taseer.
Salman Taseer was speaking on the rights of minorities, in particular Ahmadis, and he was assassinated by his own bodyguard, and he's like honored by many mosques. They were like, can you just elaborate what on this?
Yeah. So what ended up happening was he killed the guy because, you know, he had defended a lady who was accused of blasphemy, and he called the blasphemy laws, I think Kala Kanun, with some means, a black law, is in like a very bad law, right? And his own bodyguard, who's very religious, killed him. And most of the scholarship in the country celebrated him. And in fact, the guy has a shrine. His funeral was attended by probably the biggest funeral I've seen in my life being attended. He was hailed as a hero. He still is. He's called a Ghazi, Shaheed, whatever. He was eventually hanged by the government, I believe. But the fact is that these kind of incidents that we're seeing in the literature is what's leading to these people taking or doing these things. Like, we are lucky that most Muslims are either A, too ignorant of the literature, too distant from it, or just don't care. But those who do and start taking it seriously, and then they come across this shit, it can really, really stir up some bad ideas in their head.
I would argue that it's not that they're not taking it seriously enough. I would say that it's been controlled by the imams. So the imams, the scholars, for example, the modern scholars, you know, Hamza Yusuf and Yasir Qadhi are the best examples. Yasir Qadhi actually worked, and he got in trouble for this. He worked with the US government to be against extremism. Like, he was actually preaching that, you know, Muslims, you guys should be working with the government to help, you know, weed out extremists. I know, you know, for example, there was this Toronto, was it Toronto 18 or something? There was a bunch of Muslims that wanted to, you know, blow up something or do something. And there were people that were working in the Muslim community to report them. So there's always Muslims that, and it's not just like, we're not talking about non-practicing Muslims. I'm talking about even like religious imams will say it's your duty. And like, for example, I actually mentioned on Facebook that I know a guy that was a jihadi and he wanted to do some stuff, right? And I had Muslims tell me, did you report this to CSIS, the Canadian Security Services, right? And I'm like, no, I didn't. And they're like, you should. Religious practicing Muslims told me, we don't want this potential terrorist who I know left the country. We don't want him coming back and doing anything. Because now let's talk about this. This is something I wanted to kind of focus on as well, because I want to have a little bit of, I want people to see the big picture, which is, what is the outcome of what this guy did? This guy has now caused so much fear and uncertainty at Speaker's Corner. Speaker's Corner may never be the same again. The Muslims are scared as well, because they might get a backlash attack, right? And the non-Muslims, of course, are scared. Like, if I was at Speaker's Corner now, I know people, ex-Muslims in London, before this happened, were scared because they live near Speaker's Corner. The public activists living in London, they don't want to go on the internet anymore. They don't want to talk about Islam because of this, because of like the type of people that can do stuff like this. So the Muslim community now has to do damage control. That's the entire point of Muhammad Hijab. He's trying to do damage control and say this has nothing to do with Islam, nothing to do with the Muslim community. The Muslim community, I do think, is not going to be happy about this, because it's going to make their lives more miserable too. Like Muhammad Hijab said, and I, as a former Muslim, I put myself in his shoes and I totally understand what he means. Every time there's a terrorist attack as a Muslim, you're like, please, 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 please don't be a Muslim. Please, please. And if it's a Muslim, like, shit, again. Now everyone's looking at you like, you know, you're the bad guy that's going to blow up the plane. Right. And you're not that bad guy. I wasn't that guy. I wasn't going to blow up no planes, but everyone's now scared of me and I feel uncomfortable. So the terrorists, at the end of the day, this is what they want. They don't give a shit about anybody else. They want to cause mayhem. They want non-Muslims to fear Muslims. They want Muslims to not want to be among non-Muslims. They want Muslims to leave, to go to the Muslim countries. Like, they just want chaos. This is what these type of people thrive on.
The literal definition of when Allah says, right, terrorize the hearts of the disbelievers, and Muhammad saying, I was made victorious with terror being cast into the hearts.
That's what they want. They're implementing this, but unfortunately, it's going to hurt Muslims. Mm-hmm. But they don't think about these things. It's like, you know, it's kind of like when Yasir Qadri talks about these zealous young, you know, guys that are like going and causing more fitna. Like, for example, Fareed leaking this entire Quran thing. They mm-hmm. think they're doing good for the community, but they're actually causing so much damage. This is the type of thing that exists in the Muslim community too. Now, of course, we can ask, why does this keep happening? You know, it could happen in other communities. And I was, you know, we were having a private conversation before. It's possible that among other communities, you would have violent retributions like this as well. But it wouldn't be inspired by the books or the religious teachings, because I'm going to be speaking to an ex-fundamentalist Christian on my channel next Saturday. I'm going to ask him about this. Is there any way to read the Bible and to want to do what, like, Muslim terrorists do? I don't, as a non-Christian, someone that doesn't know Christianity, I don't see the connection. Because with the Bible, yes, there's a lot of terrible things that happen in the Bible. Like this fellow I was talking to mentioned child sacrifice in the Bible, child sacrifice. But the Quran, like when it says attack and this and that, Muslims take that as, you know, and many Muslims will take that as in a command that applies even today, like slavery. Slavery still applies to this day. Whereas with Christianity or some other religious teaching, I don't know if it's a direct connection. I don't know if you can make that same connection. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting situation. Like, it's Muslims, like, are obviously, like I said, like, I know so many Muslims. They do not want to do this, any of this. They don't want part of this. In fact, they want this to go away, especially the ones living in the West, right? But then the problem is the guys who are doing these attacks, they think that living in the West itself is bad. They think that there is no idea of Muslims living in the West. They should be gone back to immigrating to Muslim lands and whatnot, right? There's hadith for that and whatnot. So when these guys come with a mindset, they don't care about the after effects of the Muslims that are going to be living in the West, what they're going to face from all this, some extra scrutiny and whatnot. They just are already in a warlike mindset where it's us versus them. It's Muslims against the world, or Islam is going to take over the world, whatever their jihadi mindset tells them to. And like, they read these books and they got the backing of scholars, you know, go kill blasphemers. Like, or if you can't do it, it's the Amir's duty to do it. And I mean, if it's in a non-Muslim country, that's what I was trying to get back to. If you send a Muslim from a Muslim country with the intention of killing somebody for blasphemy, exactly like Muhammad did with Ka'b bin Ashraf, Abu Rafi, and a couple others, he sent out assassin squads. You can circumvent this whole law of the land idea, right? So this is, it's messed up, but again, like, it's just like the religion is so contradictory at its core framework, you can't really do anything about it. The thing is, like Muslims have to realize, the thing is, they have to acknowledge, first of all, we can't just like keep evading the elephant in the room that Islam has issues with violence and freedom of speech and killing cartoonists. I mean, come on. We see this from Muhammad's own life, his Sahaba, greatest of the greatest scholars. So till Muslims acknowledge that, once we acknowledge that, then the next step is to denounce these scholars and take them off that pedestal they're put on. And that's where we need these guys like Hijab, who is trying to make this another police's fault. Like, what the hell, dude? No, it's your books, your scholars.
Wait, there's something I want to say about Hijab. I noticed, I don't know if you guys noticed, but he led with basically telling the guy, why did you do this? This is bad for the community. You don't need to do this because we're doing dawah in other ways and like we're going to win in other ways. He didn't say this is a bad thing to do. He said, you don't need to go that far because we've got it from here.
I think he said it was
a bad thing.
I think
he said, it was a pretty bad.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah.
Like there was a lot of like, again, I felt like he was insincere because he kept trying to look at it as like, this is bad for the community. And I know it is. And I know as a Muslim, I remember feeling, just like you said, every time someone does something, I'm like, I hope it's not a Muslim. And I still do hope it's not a Muslim.
Yeah, because like we're still brown, so we still get to face the racism.
And also like Muslims, not just myself. I don't want Muslims to be, you know, attacked out of nowhere just because a guy did that in Hyde Park. But I just noticed that, like you said, there's never taking responsibility for the texts. And about that, you were talking about the hadith about the slave owner who killed his slave. It's funny because among the fatwas about this, it was said explicitly that someone who disparages the Prophet, basically that could be seen as you're in a war. Like in this situation, it was okay because that was a war situation and you killed someone in a war. So that is inspiring people to see you know, disparaging the Prophet as an act of war, even if everyday Muslims don't act on it.
This is actually one apologist, I'm not going to name who, but when I was debating them about this, the concubine, the blind man killing the concubine hadith, like, why did he kill her? She said, as soon as she started spewing hatred against Muhammad, she could have been accused of being a spy or working with the enemy, because that shows that she's not on the side of the Muslims. So I'm like, therefore, the next step is to stab her. It's like, well,
yeah. I was told that too. Like, they were suspicious. Like, maybe they were suspicious of her because someone told me this, an apologist on TikTok. Because what if she was acquired in such a way that she hates the Prophet, you know, because of how the war went down? What concubine loves her master, you know, because of the way that they were bought or brought into concubinage? It's insanity. But aside from, like, you were talking about the real dangers of someone circumventing these laws of the land rules, I am more worried about, it's shocking the parallels between the justifications for that hadith, that specifically that concubine hadith, and the justifications for what happened in the UK 2 days ago. Things like, she was warned multiple times. I've read that in both.
A video 2 weeks ago. There's a video that says last warning to Hatun Tash. And then
and they see that as a good thing. Like, she was warned multiple times, just like the scholars say this concubine was warned multiple times. So she had it coming. So
there was this guy on Twitter, Halal Newton. He was saying that he's not happy that she got stabbed, but he will not pray for her to recover. And there was a bunch of Muslims.
As if that makes a fucking difference, guys. As if that makes a difference.
Like, and then the hadith they posted was, you only love and hate for the sake of Allah. So he's like, how can you pray for an enemy of Allah or a person who deserves to be killed?
Is that what they have to focus on in that moment? Whether, you know, imaginary prayers are going to work or not, he's going to do them for her?
Yeah.
It's a lack of empathy too. So the point that I'm getting at here is, I'm less worried about, you know, Muslims stabbing people. Like we've all said, that's not something that we're worried about. I'm worried about the sentiment around this, that Muslims carry, the hatred that they carry towards the people who get stabbed, and the lack of empathy towards them. Because I think that's indicative of a bigger problem, not of a literal violence, but of like ostracization of a lot of people who, you know, Muslims think deserve to die just in a different country.
I just saw something. Can I share it? It's a video by a Muslim condemning the attack. It's interesting. If you guys can give me 1 second. Oh, man. I don't know if the sound is going to work now. Hold on 1 second. Properties. Sharing sound is always problematic here. Let me see if I can do this. Sorry, keep talking. I need a second.
If you can put the slides on. Or actually, I'll just share my screen with them.
Okay, I got it. I got it now. Hold on. New tab. I think I got it. Okay. Yeah. Can you see?
Yeah.
Can you guys hear it?
Yeah.
Sort of. Today is 25th of July. Turn the volume all the way up.
We heard about an incident in the Speaker's Corner, London, and we absolutely unconditionally condemn what happened to Hatun, who was there, and she was attacked by an individual who is still unknown. The culprit must be arrested and the law must take its course. This behavior is absolutely abhorrent and unacceptable. There are all sorts of people walking around in the park, some of whom are emotionally unstable, others are able to have decent dialogues. we must be very, very careful about what we say in the park and who we say it to. Cartoon has been provoking people.
What?
So this is my God. This is the problem. This is the problem, right?
Let him finish his victim blaming. Hold on. I was like about to clap, and now I'm like,
yeah,
about to hit my head on the wall. Okay, let me just finish this.
Very, very long, and the police is aware of our
behavior. Oh my God!
He has been warned and detained by the police.
Come on.
Multiple times. She has
come on, come on.
So what if she wears a t-shirt with a cartoon?
Oh, that's my God.
Dude, that's the look at what she's wearing. That's a look at what she's wearing, but for stabbings. The irony. Jesus.
And we ask the police to take appropriate action against the culprit who attacked her. At the same time, she needs to be advised again with regards to our content.
Oh my God.
Advised.
This is, guy is unbelievable. I was
the one thing that's missing is if these guys had the balls to condemn these texts that are calling for impunity killings of blasphemers and these stabbings of these slave women for insulting Muhammad. I wish these guys had that same enthusiasm to condemn those, because if you can't do that, you're just a hypocrite.
You know what I'm gonna say, and I
you cannot condemn.
I don't want to be unfair, but I want to say something, and again, I could be wrong, and it's not about these people, but just these type of people, what would they do if they were in power? This is like the saying right here, like the first half of what he said and the second half of what he's saying is not matching. And it feels like if these people were in power, like they would just execute us. Like they would put us in jail. They would shut us up somehow. Like that's the feeling I get. I don't know if I'm right or wrong on that, but that's how I feel.
I'm just baffled. I wish like they could. The thing is, here's the funny bit. If these guys were in Pakistan and this had happened, these guys would not even be allowed to condemn the attack because they'd be killed by somebody for condemning the attack. I'm not even joking. Nobody in Pakistan, if you get accused of blasphemy, no lawyer takes your case because the lawyers get killed. You can't even have a defendant. So I'm trying to explain to them that they're trying to. It's just. I wish this whole circles back to these guys having the balls to call out their own texts that encourage these things.
But he's blaming her. Why would he even do that? He's blaming her. Although she's wearing a shirt.
Yeah, he's wearing a shirt or drilling a hole through a book is worthy enough to get stabbed by someone. Like, come on,
it's
like, guys.
It's pathetic. This is just pathetic. Should I finish the video?
Yeah.
I'm scared to see what else he's going to say.
Yeah, let's finish.
Okay, do we need to hear that?
I'm Mansoor from Speaker's Corner. I just want to really make it very clear to everyone who's listening and watching. We condemn this horrible attack or incident that's taking place on her.
Yeah, exactly.
No
okay.
one should be treated like this. The police and the authorities must take appropriate actions to bring the park safe for everyone. Speaker's Corner is not a place for fighting, but it's a place where people speak, people have dialogue, people have interactions and learn from each other. So to understand, you know, how to tolerate each other's views, to bring the communities together. That's what we're all about. And anyone who is unable to take criticisms, they should not be coming to speakers.
Did he just say that? Did he just say what I think he said?
Is that a Muslim ban on Muslims on Speaker's Corner? Is
well, I wouldn't say Muslims, but like, come on.
Replay that last minute or so.
To bring the communities together. That's what we're about. And anyone who is unable to take criticisms because they're emotionally moved and provoked, they should not be coming to speakers.
I can't believe he just said that. Like, Adnan is just saying, she's provoking people. She has holes in the Quran. She's wearing a shirt. And then this guy's like, you shouldn't be allowed to speak his Quran if you can't control yourself. I tell your friend right there, Adnan, he shouldn't be allowed to speak his Quran for what he just said.
It makes no sense.
You can't make this up, eh?
Like, yeah. Like, don't go to speaker's corner if you can't control yourself. But then, like, bro. Yeah, it's a bro moment. Exactly.
But then you're like, actually, like, did they talk to each other before making this statement?
I hope that.
it's like contradicting. Well,
it's like saying, we condemn the killings of the Charlie Hebdo cartoonists, but I wish they hadn't made the cartoons, you know?
But I wish she would, but she shouldn't be wearing that shirt. She's causing a lot of, she's causing issue or whatever, right?
Oh my God. It did make no sense.
Yeah.
Gosh, this was what did she do to provoke? Like, come on. Like, not anything against her. She's a very small lady, and she's not that intimidating. Like, man, like, if you're scared by a cartoon, you're pissed off a cartoon that you have to stab a woman, it says a lot about your own insecurities and your religion, man. That's what we should be talking about. I just want to get back to the slides.
I'm like lost for words here. Let me share
this. So we realize where the condemnation should be directed to instead of victim blaming.
Oh my God. Yeah. Okay. Hold on. Chrome tab. Blasphemy. Okay.
Oh, all right. And we're on like slide number 6, I think.
Why did it make a new window? That's weird. Okay. Anyways. This one?
Yeah. So this one, we're just going to quickly go over. We see that it says a lot of the names of the jurists says that by virtue of deliberation and consideration, it is incumbent to kill the one who disparages or reviles the prophet. So it's like obligatory. It's like fard for somebody to go wajibul qatl, right? Like they say. Then it says Levantine scholars on the authority of Imam Malik and Al-Awza'i, it was a statement adopted by Thawri, Abu Hanifa, and the Kufan scholars. So these are big scholars, and they're all just saying, you know, like blasphemy killings are okay. And then there's this other incident where it says that one person reviled Abu Bakr, and the person asked, I'm going to go chop his neck off. He's like, no, we only chop it off for Muhammad being reviled. Like, okay.
It's only Muhammad. Yeah.
Omar, so here is an interesting, Omar ibn al-Khattab wrote saying, it is not lawful to slaughter a Muslim when owing to cursing any of the people. Yet in the case of reviling Allah's messenger, he is to be killed with immunity. So if you abuse other fellow Muslims that are alive, that can cause actual realistic pragmatic problem in societies, you know, that's fine. But if you abuse a dead man, you should be killed. Like, it's like, what the fuck, guys? I'm sorry for my language, but like sometimes it just comes out.
Yeah.
Then
yep.
It says, and then they go on like chapter 2 and whatnot. And we'll go to the next slide.
I was going to leave this comment. Thank you for the super chat. The Dawah clue is in damage control mode. It'll be interesting to see how they use this attack to claim this goes against the teachings of Islam. Yeah, no one said that, have they? But I guess kind of Muhammad Jab kind of said that, but like without any justification, really. Right? Like,
well, if he wants to be thorough with it, come out, stop being a pusillanimous coward, and open these books. Tell the world what your scholars say. You know, you love Ibn Taymiyyah, Jawzi, Ibn al-Qayyim. All these scholars, they said the same thing. If you cannot condemn them, you are the definition of a pusillanimous coward.
No, that's not going to work in getting him to talk to you. You got to quote his line. You got to ask him, are you that intellectually... No, what was it? Are you that mentally enslaved and intellectually subservient?
Pusillanimous is his term too, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, and maybe that'll bring him here.
Okay. One more super chat quickly. Zaka Midi Khayov, $5 for Abdullah 1 and $5 for Abdullah 2. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much. You forgot Abdullah 3. You had to send another $5.
issue with Zakah on my behalf.
Oh, man. One more super chat. Okay. This is AD, the spawning when a Muslim lady was attacked 2 years earlier. This is AD? I don't know.
Who is AD?
I have no idea.
Responses.
Anyway, thank you for the super chat. And okay, that's it. So yeah, next slide. Yeah, but I'm almost done.
All right. So the next slide we'll go to is the Qadiyad. So this is, again, he gives out a few names. So in the third paragraph, you see Hussein bin Ali narrated, said, "Whoever reviles a prophet, kill him. And whoever reviles my companions, flog him with the prescribed punishment or penalty." In another sound hadith, the prophet commanded to kill Ka'b bin Ashraf. And they're using, look at what it says. So he dispatched someone who assassinated him stealthily without warning. And without, in the brackets, giving him the chance to repent. Right? And then they go on again using the incident we talked about. Abu Rafi was slaughtered for the same reason. He used to offend the messenger and help his enemies by making poetry. Then the two slave girls we talked about. What am I returning to? That these scholars will then use those incidents to then justify these ideas, right? And that is exactly what the Muslims will do when they read these incidents. That they'll get ideas. Okay, if the Sahaba did it, Allah didn't punish them. Muhammad was okay. If I do it, it'll be okay, you know? And I mean, you keep going, like, it's just, he keeps giving examples of people, like, therein as the prophet was reviled by a man. So he said, whoever suffices me against my enemy, therein this guy, Zubair, said, it's me. And he got in a duel and just killed the guy. I guess, like, some guy says anything to Muhammad in a debate, he's like, oh, I don't like that. The guy's like, you want me to kill him? And some guy get up and whatever. But anyways, I just want to quickly go through, I'm not going to go through the details in each slide. We're going to go, I just want to show the next four or five slides, just to give you an idea that Ibn Taymiyyah wrote a book. The one slide says that here you can see that it's first issue, whoever insults the prophet is to be killed. The second issue is killing is prescribed on him. The ones like he has to be killed, you know. Third issue is like they say the dhimmis also are not exempt. Like if you say it once, that's it. This is a non-repentable sin is what I'm trying to get to. And yeah, if you once commit blasphemy, you're done. You have to be killed. A lot of the scholars say that. And basically the book goes on and forward and he gives names of basically every scholar you can find, the four major schools and whatnot. And it shows to you that the problem is internal. It starts internally. If you keep trying to deflect the problem that, you know, oh, you know, it's because he was promoting him, or like Hatun was provoking him, or the Charlie Hebdo cartoonists were provoking him. No, they were provoking you to get this exact reaction so they can prove this very point. And you exactly fall for it each and every time, because the whole hate and this idea of blasphemy is tied in the framework of your theology. That's something that Muslims need to understand. It's not gonna, this discussion is not going to go anywhere until the core of the issue is realized, which is the texts.
I just want to quote, we have Apostle Prophet here. Thanks for calling out Adnan Rashid. The guy is a giant hypocrite. Yeah. That was, I mean, I'm trying to be fair here. Like, while you guys were talking, I said, let me see if I can find something from the Muslim community. And I was happy to see what they were saying until the second half. I was just like, okay, you guys are your own worst enemies here, because your scholars, this is the type of things they're saying, the victim blaming. There's a time to, like, you don't need to blame her. Okay, this is just stupid. Yes, you don't like the way she behaves or whatever, but you don't say that after she just got stabbed. That just sounds dumb. It's just, like, ridiculous, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And just for everyone who is watching, you know, please do give a thumbs up to the stream. This type of content is, you know, it takes a lot of... there's a lot of risk involved in talking about this type of stuff on YouTube. So please do thumbs up, subscribe, like the video, all that stuff. Thank you for the super chats, guys. Gondal, anything else about this book you wanted to mention? The Unsheathed Sword.
Yeah, so this is... it's written by Ibn Taymiyyah, Sheikhul Islam Ibn Taymiyyah, and he goes through a lot of evidence and he quotes scholars, Imam Ibn Hanbal, Shafi, Malik, Sufyan al-Thawri, like any scholar you can think of that's relevant to this discussion. And he brings forth these ideas. If you want to quickly go through the slides, just there's like four left. skim through them. Yeah.
And I'm just going to read one more comment while before. Yeah. Over 24 hours, Hatun subscribers increased from 34,000, 39,000. Anyhow, remember Ali Dawa did battle against Hatun last year, pulling Chet away from him, making it fall. Days later, Ali gloated about it.
Oh, yeah. And then he uploaded the video. We're proud of that. And then Hatun was told that her life might be at risk by the authorities. This happened last year. Yeah. Totally forgot.
I guess in that sense, Mohammed Hijab is right. The authorities need to protect her. If she's getting threats against her life, yes, the authorities need to protect her from extremists in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Extremists like Ali Dawa? Or
Ali Dawa
the one who was...
Proud.
Yeah. Yeah, well...
Isn't that Mohammed Hijab's friend? Wait, is Mohammed Hijab reprimanding his friend here? I don't understand.
I thought they're buddies.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. So I'll go back to the next slide. Let me share the slides again.
Quickly go through them. So I'm just going to quickly read these. On the left side, you see the first issue. Whoever insults the prophet is to be killed, whether they're Muslim or a disbeliever. This is the general view of the scholars. Ibn al-Mundhir said, is to be killed. Malik, Laith, Ahmed, Ishaq, Shafi also said this. It's narrated from Abu Nu'man that the Zimmi is not killed, but then others said that he is. It's narrated from Abu Bakr al-Farsi, from the companion of Ash-Shafi, that the Muslims have unanimous agreement upon killing whoever insults the Prophet. That is the ruling that whoever insults other than him is to be lashed. So Prophet is to be killed, Sahabi's lashing. Consensus taken from the, it says, Tabi'in, companions. Sheikh al-Islam ibn Taymiyyah said the same thing. Al-Qadi Ayyad, okay. Muslims have a consensus. This is Ibn Ishaq bin Rahawi or something. He's saying the Muslim have a consensus that whoever insults Allah or insults his messenger, rejects anything from the Quran or kills a prophet, such a person is a believer. Khatabi says the same. Muhammad bin Sa'noon. It just goes on and on. Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal even says that. And anyways, we can go to the next slide now.
Okay, one more super chat. James, buddy James, because that would create a fault line with big name Dawa guys, YQ, etc., would have to either publicly defend the possibility of death for apostasy in the future or publicly throw it under the bus.
Exactly. They have to eventually get to it, right? Let's go to the next one.
And thank you, Amit, as well.
Can we all keep pressuring them? Like, can we all keep pressuring them to answer
this? If they can't open these books and condemn their scholars for saying these horribly violent things, then they are all pusillanimous cowards.
They're complicit. Yeah.
So here an interesting thing is the link of jizya and blasphemy and why you're supposed to kill the dhimmis and when you do it, right? The evidence for the obligation of killing the one who insults, right? And he goes on where he says that he uses the words 929. Remember the jizya being a subjugation of humiliation tax? He then explains it. Also, it is known that they're paying the jizya is while submitting in a humbled state and that their state of being subdued is throughout their duration in the Muslim state. So whoever insults Allah or his messenger, then they are not in a subdued state. That is because the one who is subdued is lowly, and this action is an action of one with power. Just the twisted thinking that is being used here is quite interesting. And then they use this idea to say that because they blaspheme, they violate their covenant, and then their covenant's broken, they become liable to be punished, and they can be killed. But anyways, let's go to the next slide. This one was interesting, the one after. All right, so as for the proofs from the Sunnah, so remember the blind man hadith again pops up. And Ibn Taymiyyah is using that to show that, yes, sometimes vigilantism is okay. And if you look at the bottom on the second side, you see Imam Ahmad uses it as proof for killing blasphemers. So it is possible that this incident and others... there was actually, some suggest that there were more than one incident where more than one Jew was killed. And we did mention that there was a couple killings. They use this as evidence as well. And they also say Shafi used as evidence that if a dhimmi insults the prophet, they are to be killed. And it is the famous and well-known story of Ka'b bin Ashraf they use, that if Ka'b was still under the protection, he said that he was killed. And I think we have just one more last slide. And again, this goes into more details about the same things that we've talked about, where it says Abu Dawud, Ismail ibn Ishaq, Abu Bakr, Abdul Aziz, Al-Qadi, Ayad, Abu Yala, all these people hold the idea that it's permissible to kill somebody who insults Muhammad. Then they give the idea. Remember Abdullah ibn Abi Sar, the scribe of Muhammad? Same issue with him. He said that, you know, Muhammad's making stuff up. And then they go in a long-ass detail where Muhammad actually wanted him dead. But that's the end of it for the presentation. I mean, this book is available. You can get it on archive.org. Just write The Unsheathed Sword and you can read it. It's very elaborate, goes into much more detail. From my side, it's going to be, again, as long as they keep dodging the bullet, it's going to keep coming and biting them. You cannot avoid the question. It's going to be the sources till they don't condemn their scholars and their sources. Nothing's going to change.
And Aladdin, do you want to add anything to that? I want to share something after you're done.
I just wanted to say I was happy to see that Muslims are kind of arguing among themselves, because some da'wah people have been kind of dishonest depending on who is asking the question. And they're being called out by Muslims who want a consistent answer. So even if that answer is a bad one, at least like I'm glad that they're being called out to be consistent. Yeah, and honestly, when they do that kind of stuff, they fuel this narrative of taqiyya that, you know, the bigots would accuse Muslims of doing all the time. I don't know if you guys would agree with that, but...
Agree with what?
With the idea of taqiyya.
Taqiyya?
No, that like da'wah people giving two-faced answers, like depending on who's asking, fueling these accusations of taqiyya, which I know what taqiyya is, not what people claim it is, but...
Yeah, I think the pretty... most of the da'wah guys are... I don't know if they do that. Do they do that? I don't know. I've heard, I mean, I don't know if they do that. I think they're pretty open about what they believe and stuff, and they just say the same thing to everyone. I did as a Muslim.
Someone who had some drama with David Wood recently. Have you guys heard about that?
No.
Never mind then. I can't.
Okay. So I'm going to share my screen. I tried to look up, again, I'm trying to be as fair as possible. So I looked up a fatwa on vigilante violence, the best one I could find. It's not about blasphemy because they don't have one on blasphemy, but they had one I could find on HUD punishment for zina. So it says no one should carry out the HUD punishments without the permission of the ruler. The HUD punishment is basically stoning or lashing or anything like that. If there's no ruler who rules according to Sharia, it is not permissible for ordinary people to carry out the HUD punishments. Whoever does that is sinning, because carrying out the HUD punishment requires examining the matter and requires Shari knowledge in order to know the conditions of proof. The ordinary people have no knowledge of such things, and the carrying out of one of the HUD punishments, meaning stoning, adulterers, or whatever, maybe even blasphemers, by ordinary people leads to many evils and the loss of security, whereby people will attack one another and kill one another or chop off another's hands on the grounds that they are carrying out HUD punishments. Al-Qurtubi said there is no dispute among the scholars that qisas, retaliatory punishments, such as execution, cannot be carried out except by those in authority who are obliged to carry out the qisas and carry out HUD punishments, etc., and so on and so forth, and it's not possible for all the Muslims to carry it out, which is why they appointed a leader. Ibn Rushd al-Qutubi said, with regard to the one who should carry out the punishment, for example, the punishment for drinking alcohol, they agreed the ruler should carry it out, and this applies to all the HUD punishments. And again, another scholar says the same thing. Nobody should carry out the HUD punishments except the ruler, unless it's a man carrying out the HUD punishment for zina on his male or female slave. So basically, yeah, okay, that's kind of weird. Okay, let's continue. Sheikh Ibn Islam Ibn Taymiyyah was asked about a married woman, so on and so forth. Is it permissible to kill her secretly? He replied, her son's duty to prevent her, blah, 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 blah. He can detain her. He can tie her up. But he should not. He should not beat his mother. It is not permissible for them to cut off ties, but he should try to prevent them from doing evil. Okay, so basically, and it is not permissible for them to carry out HUD punishment, execution or otherwise, or they will be sinning. Mm-hmm. Okay, anyways, like I'm not going to keep going on and on because I think it's pretty straightforward. I wish I could have found one specifically on blasphemy,
yeah,
but I couldn't. But the point I'm trying to make is this is consistent with what I was taught as a Muslim. Mm-hmm. Nobody is allowed to go and do Sharia law on their own. Okay, and it's very important for a video like this. When we're doing a video like this, it's very important to point this out, because YouTube, you know, the type of people coming on the channel right now, the people that are saying, you know, Europe is for Europeans, ex-Muslims only should be allowed in Britain. Like these type of people need to hear that it's not like, yes, there are going to be people that believe in vigilante violence, but majority of Islamic scholars will teach, despite what these classical texts say, the majority of modern Islamic scholars, who we go by, we don't go by 14th century fiqh manuals. You'd go by a modern scholar. You'd go by the Shafi imam at your mosque, or the you know, maybe escalate to a bigger imam from a bigger community, but you wouldn't be going by 14th century fiqh manual, because that fiqh is for the 14th century. For that, yes, your imam might consult that book to try to figure it out, but we just want to be clear. And this is my concluding remarks, and then I'll let you guys do your concluding remarks. Yes, Islam is pretty horrid. There's a lot of really terrible things in it, which is why things like this do tend to happen and are celebrated on large scales, like in Pakistan, like Abdullah Gondal was saying, like the Salman Taseer funeral, murder funeral. There are these problems in the community. I think the community is moving forward in some regard. The victim blaming needs to stop. Adnan Rashid, you are an idiot for saying what you said. There's a time and place to call out Hatun. This was not the time and place to call her out. This was not the time to blame her for what she's wearing. This is not the time to blame her for having a Quran with holes in it. You civilized people, and I'm being respectful, you civilized people need to grow up and let these things go. It's not going to hurt you. A little lady holding a book with holes in it, it's funny. It's not going to hurt you. Your God is greater than that. If you believe in God and his messenger, he's not hurt by a book with holes in it. Like, get a grip on yourself. Nobody even cares about Hatun. Like, half the people in the world don't even know where she is. You guys are creating these problems for yourself. Now she's international news. Times of Israel, BBC, New York Times. Like, she's all over the place. Well done, terrorist attacker. You've just made front page news for your religion. You just made Muslims look bad, you idiot, right? You are an idiot. You are a complete, like, go hit your head on the wall. Because what you've done is you've created an international incident that everybody is going to know about. Nobody knew about her. Her channel is now growing. You're doing the Lord's work, Jesus Christ. She's calling people to Jesus Christ. You converted more people to Jesus by this stupid stabbing or whatever, knife attack. Then, like, you're doing her work for her. Well done. Congratulations. Because of you, people are going to become Christian. I'm not Christian. I don't support Christianity. But you're an idiot. And that's my concluding words for today. And finally, don't blame Muslims. Don't blame all Muslims for this. Blame the ideology. Blame the nasty teachings. Mm-hmm. Don't assume all Muslims believe this. That's my final words. And you guys have the last word.
So, my concluding remarks, I'm just going to talk about that incident with the blind slave girl. I found an Islam QA fatwa that is specific to that slave woman being killed as a vigilante action. And that leads to a whole conundrum. If you can share my screen. Perfect. So, I'm reading that, and they go on this detail, right? So, by insulting the messenger of Allah and reviling him, all her rights were denied, and she deserved the punishment of execution with the Sharia imposing on anyone who reviles the Prophet, whether he's a Muslim, Zimmi, or Mu'ahid, because the transgression of the status of Prophet is the biggest thing, right? Now here comes a discussion of why the vigilantism was allowed in this case. There you go. The master can carry out the had punishment on his slave based on the Prophet said that, narrated by Imam Ahmad and others. So if your slave does something, you can do vigilantism with them. Now they did disagree as to to what extent. Like, can you just flog them and stuff, or you actually execute them?
The slave woman, just to be clear, is a little bit of a different. I mean, this is kind of ancient thinking. You own the slave; she's your property. So just keep that in mind. That in the context of your property, it's like your dog biting you. Like, you can hit your dog. That's what they're saying. You can kill your dog if it bites you. Exactly. So that's how they see it. That's how they see slaves back then, right? So just want to make that disclaimer.
Yeah. Now, another guy says that most can be said that the guy is transgressing the position of the ruler, but the ruler can then just forgive him, like Muhammad kind of did. Like, yeah, it's okay. He then says, this one is very important. Although this was a had punishment, it also comes under the heading of killing a harbi, a non-Muslim in a state of war against Islam.
That's what I was
saying.
If
you blaspheme against Muhammad, you are basically putting a target on you that, hey, like, I'm a harbi, right? So this is the circumvent loopholes that are existent in the theology, like I keep talking about. And then it says it is permissible for anyone to kill a warmonger, which kind of makes sense. If you're the guy running around, you know, hacking people, you're not going to call the, well, they didn't even have the call. You're not going to freaking send a pigeon to the ruler to send you a sword to kill him. But the thing is, like, they're viewing blasphemy the same as that. And they do say that in certain cases, also, similar things happened at the time of the Messenger of Allah, such as the hypocrite was killed by Omar without the permission of the Prophet, when the hypocrite did not agree with the ruling of the Prophet. So then the Quran was revealed approving Omar's action. What the hell?
there's an example where, this is a funny example where, you know, every time the hypocrite would like question the Prophet, Omar would be like, do you want me to kill him? Do you want me to kill him? And Muhammad would say, no, because I don't want people to say I kill my followers. He's doing PR, damage control. Don't kill my... I don't want people to say that about me. I want them to say I'm a nice guy. Aladdin, final words for you?
Yeah, so... Okay, my concerns about all of this going on, like I said before, is not physical violence that much. Especially for if you're not a vocal critic of Islam, you have almost no reason to like to worry about being stabbed by a Muslim. No reason at all. Does that make me on edge as someone who does talk about Islam? Absolutely. This is not to make myself more important than I am, but you never know the chances, right? And this is something that I can easily point to when people keep asking me why I keep my identity hidden, but unfortunately, they're not going to listen. But aside from the selfish reasons, what I really hate about this is a lot of Muslims aren't aware of these ahadith that we're talking about, right? And once they're made aware through means like this, abruptly in their life, they're made aware of it, usually by a source they don't trust very much. They're going to have to take a firm position without thinking, and the firm position might land on, you know, agreeing. Well, they have to agree with the hadith. And then just like that, you've got people who have become worse because of a hadith they didn't even know about before. So I think we need to address this at an academic level, I suppose, at a da'wah level, because they need to teach the masses, you know, either yes, this hadith is, you know, we accept this, or no, we don't. And then people will have time to think about it. They will have time to select whichever da'wah person they want to listen to, rather than hearing it, you know, as a gotcha when we're talking about the stabbings. I understand this is hard for everybody, including us. And I just hope that these kind of things stop happening. And I don't think it'll just go away by itself. Like Gondal was saying, we need to force these people to talk about it so we understand what their position is on it. Yeah,
absolutely. I don't totally understand this comment, but because he made a super chat, I'll just read it. It's only when a mosquito lands on your balls, you realize there's a way to solve problems without using violence.
You don't want to be violent with you.
Okay. You're just like, I should have done that, right? I'm going to say, I said as final words, but I'm just going to quote this. I'm very much against this comment. There is no moderate Muslim. If you ask any Muslim, do they really want a true Islamic system, which is a caliphate system? 100% would like that. How many Muslims do you know? My name is Jeff.
No.
Sounds like some Christian apologists.
A lot of Muslims just run away from the Muslim countries to go to the secular countries, to democracies, not to caliphates, right? Like, in fact,
a lot of them do glorify these ideas of ideal caliphate, but I don't think any of them are plotting to bring it to you or something, you know?
Yeah. Anytime you're trying to you make 1.5 billion people all the same, you know you're doing something wrong. There's so many differences in the Muslim community. Like, you can't just say they're all the same. Let's just, anyways. Okay, we're going to end it on that. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Aladdin, for organizing this conversation. It was a great idea. Thank you, Abdullah Gondal. And you have something coming up that we're going to really enjoy. You want to tell us a little bit about that before we end?
Let's do a quickly sneak peek if you're okay with that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, let me pull it up. So as you've been, you're aware that I'm working on a project about Muhammad's mental health, right? So I have acquired some manuscripts or some books written by actual neurologists. Now, I'm just going to skim through this. This is not exhaustive. This is just some of his writings. This is only 56 pages out of the 200. But just to show you, this neurologist wrote about Muhammad, and I'm just going to skim through. He brings cases, figures exactly what Muhammad happened, and he brings a lot of cases exactly what Muhammad experienced. And then he goes into a lot of detailed personality traits, more cases with like Muhammad's mimicking Muhammad's things. He goes into Muhammad's own medical history, goes into a lot of detail. He goes into symptoms. It's fascinating because it's written by an expert. He even notices the Quran stickiness in speech, jumping around topics. He gives a very good explanation for that. Again, he goes about his sexuality, his hyper-aggressiveness that happened. Why does Muhammad's hypersexuality also show up in the Quran in the form of Hurul Ayn? Why does he experience that in the last 10 years of his life more than whatnot? Fascinating read. It's and then in the last part, he's more cases upon cases that match Muhammad exactly to the point that it's going to be when this comes out, this documentary.
What's the name of the book again? Someone's asking.
It's Life Alert by Dr. Dede Kurkut. It's 200 okay. pages. So my own view upon this book is that there's about 50% of the book that's very well written. There because the author is Christian and he was using a Christian publishing house. He did dedicate one chapter to talk about Christ and how Christ is the way forward. So I omitted that part. But apart from that, like this is a very, very, very good book. Now, just quickly to show you, I have another. This is called Sword and Seizure. I'm not going to skim through this because it's 200 pages, but I'm just going to zoom out.
Hold on. Let me
yeah, and it's also... I found the copy of it. This is written by Dr. Abbas. All I'm going to do is I'm going to show you who he is. Okay. So in 1970, I was accepted at the National University of Iran, where he studied psychology. Okay. Then he finished his undergrad. He went to the London School of Economics, lived in London. And then he went to California to study clinical psychology. Okay. Now I'm going to zoom in. And he eventually received his PhD. In clinical neuropsychology, he's assistant professor of clinical psychology at the Northeastern Ohio University College of Medicine, and all he specializes is diagnostics of neurological disorders. And yep, he even presented this to New York University Psychology Department, and he just wanted to write a paper. They said that you should write a full book on it. I'm going to leave this teaser here, but aside, I have so much evidence, and this is going to be amazing. I will release that. I think we will put it on Twitter through Samir and his blog, and then I'll release it on Facebook as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Okay. Thank you very much. I forgot one thing I wanted to do. Please subscribe to Apostate Aladdin's channel. He's almost at 1,000 subscribers, so let's see if we can get that up to 1,000, guys. Do go there right now if you got all the way to the end of the show. We want to get this channel like going well as well. TikTok is just being a pain in the butt to him. You know, it's difficult. But we don't want to let this go any longer because I have to go. Everyone has to go now. But do check out his channel, Apostate Aladdin. The link is there, and I'm going to add it to description as well. Thank you, everyone. If you want to follow Abdullah Gondal, I'll put his Facebook in the description as well. And to everyone else, have a good night. And to quote Apostate Prophet, stay away from Islam.
Science Hafiz.
Right. Science office. Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.